Hello and welcome to the Computing Conversations column. This column is from the July 2014 issue by Tripoli Computer and is titled Andrew Tannenbaum, The Impact of Minix. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan. The story of the evolution of Unix and Unix-like operating systems is very convoluted. Modern operating systems generally derive from the AT&T or BSD Unix or some variation of Linux. But in the beginning, there was only AT&T Unix, and if you trace the moment where the Linux-like operating systems flicker to life, you'll find the Minix operating system. Minix's original purpose was simply to support university courses that attempted to teach operating systems. Essentially, it was a set of floppy disks that came with Andrew Tannenbaum's popular book, Modern Operating Systems, first published in 1992. I visited him at the Free University in Amsterdam, and we talked about the motivation, development, and impact of that simple decision to write an operating system to teach a course. AT&T initially provided the source code to its Unix operating system to universities. It didn't have an open source license, but it was readily available, which made it a natural choice when teaching courses about operating systems. At first, Tannenbaum used a booklet written by John Lyons to teach his classes.
We were an early adopter of version 6 Unix here, and we had a VAX and PDP-11s and all that stuff. And so we were happy to run Unix, and I was teaching a course on operating systems using version 6 Unix, and John Lyons of Australia wrote a little book sort of describing it line by line, and it was very popular at universities. And the bean counters at AT&T decided this was a bad idea, that, you know, having every student in the world learn about their product, which, you know, which they owned, they thought was a horrible idea. So with version 7 came with a license saying, thou shalt not teach. Okay, so the version 7 license said you couldn't teach version 7 Unix anymore, which was, it's got to be up there, ranking up there with something Xerox did as, you know, the dumbest mistake in all of history.
As an accomplished computer scientist who'd been teaching operating systems for many years, Tannenbaum knew that writing a simple Unix-like operating system wouldn't be all that difficult.
I said, maybe I'll write my own operating system, which is compatible with V7, and then I can teach it. I sat down, and I began writing, and now it sort of worked. I got it almost to the point where it worked. And it was crashing at random. It was all the functionality was there, and it would run for 15 minutes, and then it would crash. And I was like about to give up.
Tannenbaum knew he was close, but he had trouble solving that one last bug.
So I said, I'll write a simulator for the PC, and I'll run on the simulator because that's entirely deterministic and reproducible. And then after it crashes, I can go run it again and print out the last 100,000 instructions to find out what happened. So I wrote the simulator. It took me a little while, but I got it running. So I had a complete simulator for the PC. If I had been smart, I would have invented VMware. This is, in the 80s, because I already, I'd done basically the work. I could have done translation instead of interpretation, but I didn't think it was, So I wrote a PC simulator. Anybody could do that. So I didn't care. So it worked perfectly on the simulator. It would run forever. It wouldn't run on the hardware. It only ran the simulator.
His operating system worked perfectly on the simulator. It could run forever and never crash. Seemingly, it only crashed on the hardware. He was about to give up when he got a lucky break.
One of my students, Robert from NASA, mentioned to me I was explaining this prompt to him, mentioned me offhand, when the Intel chip gets hot, it gives interrupt 15. And I said, no, it doesn't. He said, yeah, I heard that somewhere. I said, the manual doesn't mention anything about that. And so I said, well, I don't know. I can put in a test. I wasn't catching interrupt 15, of course, because the manual didn't mention it existed. So I put in a little piece of code, which caught interrupt 15. And sure enough, within an hour of running it, I get this message, hi, I'm interrupt 15. This is impossible. You'll never see this message.
Once Minix was working, Tannenbaum wanted to document it by writing a book similar to the one Lyons wrote, something that explained Minix in great detail so that it could be used to teach operating systems courses.
Most of the chapters have three sections. One is sort of the general principles of file systems or process management, whatever. The second part is how these general principles apply to Minix. What is the memory management algorithm? How is the file system organized? And what are the key data structures and so on? And the third part of every chapter is, now we're going to look at the code. Here on line 10,720, we see the main headers for the file system. And here we're declaring these headers, and now on line 14,000, we're starting with the actual main loop of the file system, and it goes and gets a request, and it takes it apart. There's a switch statement, it figures out what to do, and so it goes through the code bit by bit. So it was, like Lyons' code, and the book came with a bunch of floppy disks, which was the only transport medium in those days.
Even though this was before the internet, news of the book spread rapidly. At one point, a bookstore invited him to give a talk that was so well attended that he had to use the Santa Clara Convention Center as the venue. A worldwide bestseller, Modern Operating Systems is now in its third edition. Linus Torvalds was a student who picked up Minix and started evolving the source code.
Linus went out and bought a PC specifically for the purpose of running Minix. He was in the Minix news group. He had a big news group on the, you know, Usenet news groups. He spent a lot of time developing Linux based on Minix. He changed this, he changed that, and eventually it changed almost everything. And so it sort of launched as its own system.
In the early days, there seemed to be no reason to view Minix or Linux as commercial products. Both were academic exercises, while BSD Unix had 20 years of development and production experience. But AT&T wasn't yet done making tactical errors.
CUSIC and so on, they formed a company, BSD Incorporated, and they were trying to sell it commercially. And their phone number was 1-800-ITS-UNIX. And so what does AT&T do? Again, in one of the more brilliant commercial moves in all of history, they sued BSDI to get rid of them. And they had no knowledge at all how to sell Unix. If anybody there had an IQ of above about, say two-digit numbers, they would have gone to the BSDI guys and say, we want to buy your company, how much? And given you're AT&T, the biggest corporation in the world, no matter what number they had mentioned, we would have said, good, sign here. And they would have had the BSDI guys sell Unix. It would have been, there would have been no MS-DOS, there would have been no Windows, it would have been all Unix, and they try to stop these guys. So BSD was blocked from going commercial. I knew about this, and so I didn't want to make Minix like big commercial things. So I figured the BSD guys eventually are going to go out there, and that's a stable, mature system with many programmers and many users, many software. That would take over the commercial aspect of this, free software world.
While AT&T's lawsuit effectively stalled progress on commercializing BSD Unix, other operating systems, including Linux, began to establish their positions. With all this confusion, and with Linux addressing the market for an open-source Unix-like system, Tannenbaum kept Minix's focus on education. As the field evolved, Tannenbaum sees that there might be some value in a highly reliable operating system.
The European Union, they decided to set up a couple of new programs where basically they would give a large chunk of money, about 2.5 million euro, which is, $3.5 or $4 million, to one specific investigator. There's two categories, young investigators who are just sort of getting started and senior ones who have a track record, and basically let them go do their thing. And I applied for this and I got one of them. And with this ERC Advance grant, we're trying to go commercial, with Minix. We're pushing it in the area of embedded systems and high reliability.
Because Minix is based on a very small kernel, with most of the operating system functionality and user space processes, it's possible to recover from partial failures or even upgrade operating system components on the fly without taking the entire system down.
We think that might be interesting for applications that never want to go down, and they know that software has changed all the time, there are security fixes, and we're focusing this on the embedded world, where I think there's a lot of interest in keeping the thing running all the time. If you're running some real-time system, whether it's a radio telescope or electric power plant or some other real-time thing, you may not want to go down for reboots once in a while. And so a system which could update itself, which can repair itself, which can try to have a fairly high availability, might have a niche in there. We've got it working in the lab now for the BeagleBoard, for the BeagleBone. We're about to release it for the BeagleBlack also, which is it's like the Raspberry Pi, but even better. So we're sort of trying to see if we can find a niche there.
Regardless of Minix's possible commercial potential, there is no question that when Andrew Tannenbaum created Minix, he set the wheels in motion for an operating system market that isn't the exclusive domain of proprietary vendors. According to chaos theory, sometimes when a butterfly flaps its wings in Brazil, it can cause a hurricane in Florida. If Robert had not casually mentioned Interrupt 15, there would have been no Minix and no Linux and thus no Android, and the relative stock prices of Apple and Samsung might be quite different now. This column is from the July 2014 issue of IEEE Computer and is titled Andrew Tannenbaum, The Impact of Minix. There is supporting video material for this column that you can find in the IEEE Computer Society YouTube channel or in the IEEE Digital Library. I'm the editor of the column, and I'm Charles Severance from the University of Michigan.